Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Thursday, 27 January. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we're chatting with Viv Govender from Rand Swiss. So we had Jerome Powell last night telling us the story around rate increases, tapering and the like, and the rally. My question was that a buy the dip moment? But looking at the stats out this morning, I think we solved that one already. Salehe Otatsi, investment analyst at Anchor. The year in tech, intuitive to look back at last year, because there were some significant shifts within the sort of nuances, the subsectors. And then we're talking with Lightstone Property, residential property trends in 2021. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from CNBC. Federal Reserve points to interest rate hikes coming in March and asset purchases to also end in March. Business Day, PPC CEO Roland van Veenen defends sales that sparked a selling frenzy. No funny business detected, say analysts. CEOs are typically net sellers because they receive shares as bonuses and incentives and the like. And he just got out at a really good price. Morning markets. The US is mixed, but it closed well off the highs, with the S&P down 0.2, NASDAQ up 0.2, but both of those index futures are now trading almost 2% lower. Asia red, Sydney down 1.7, Tokyo off 2.6. Commodities mixed, gold 1,818, Brent 89.23, platinum unchanged at 1,025, palladium much higher, 2,316 per ounce, rhodium 16,790, rand 1,540. Top 40 is calling for a red open, and I hope you're sitting down for this, 1,450 points down. That's more than 2%. 10 cent trading down 3.2% in Hong Kong.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Viv Govender from Rand Swiss. Viv, if we can touch quickly on the Federal Open Monetary Committee, Jerome Powell. I don't think he said anything that surprised the market. Rates coming in March. There was a point where we were expecting rates in 2023 or even 2024, but that has been steadily moving forward. Perhaps, and I suppose the end of asset purchases, that has to sink in with when you start to raise rates as well. So I suppose, in a sense, all kind of fits together.
Yes, it does. Look, I mean, we are expecting rates to go higher. They had to. The extraordinary measures taken through COVID have to come to an end, especially as, you know, we get to the past the second year. The question about the Fed is not surprising, but confirmation is, you know, also necessary in terms of what we're expecting. Because, you know, the Fed has kind of been a bit kind of iffy about what's actually going to happen. You know, they've given statements that seem to indicate that they were altering course and would make it a bit more, you know, hawkish a few weeks ago. But there are other statements that maybe seeing them a changing tack on that. The only question I have is, you know, how clear does the Fed see the U.S. economy, the global economy at the moment? Mm. They are not in more, you know, ominous, basically. They're not, you know, better than anyone else. Despite the fact that they have more power and a lot more, you know, resources, it is quite possible they get things wrong. We have seen some indications that the U.S. economy may be under a bit more pressure than we had anticipated. Retail sales especially were very interesting. And if the U.S. economy is under pressure, and they act like this basically by, you know, raising rates and stopping asset purchases, it could be quite detrimental to the state of that economy.
And markets, when I messaged you last night, my question was, you know, was this a buy the dip opportunity earlier in the week? The top 40 was up 2.3. At that point, US markets were up over 2%. I got to say, looking at it this morning, looking at our expected open and where the US closed last night, it looks like the volatility, uncertainty and selling is perhaps here for at least a little longer.
Yes, most certainly. I mean, we have discussed this before. For the last, say, 13 years or so, any, like, significant pullback had been a case of you had to buy the dip. And even if you look back a bit further, I mean, it's been quite some time where we had a prolonged period of underperformance of the stock market. I mean, it's been many, many decades. The problem is that, you know, of course, you know, people have logical ideas as to what the market should be doing because of whatever. But there's also experience. If you've been managing money for like the last few decades and you see the market come down like this year, your history tells you that basically you buy the dip. The question now arises is, are we actually going to see a significant change in the trend of the Fed, basically, you know, where, and other parts of the world as well, where we are going into a period of rising interest rates, of you know, tighter monetary policy? If that is the case, then we might actually be seeing a case where you want to buy the dip, but maybe not right now.
Yeah, I take your point there. Yeah, buy the dip works every time until the first time it doesn't, and that's a perfectly good strategy. Yeah. But this might be it, and markets are looking a little bit wild there. And that's our question we are asking on our Twitter and LinkedIn. With the Federal Reserve giving us some more certainties, and in terms of rates and in terms of quantitative easing, is that enough to help reduce the selling that we're seeing in markets? Have your vote, have your say on our Twitter and LinkedIn page. I got to say, the evidence early this morning is no. That was Viv Govender. Rand Swiss, appreciate the time.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting now with Selecho Tatsi, investment analyst at Anchor Capital. Selecho, appreciate the early morning. A really great note that you put out. And looking back at tech last year, and I think you make the point, and I agree 100%, it's intuitive often to actually have a look back to help us sort of get a sense perhaps of where we are and where we are going. The big story from 2021 in tech was geographic, China versus the US. I got to say, we all knew it, but the images you put there were frankly quite astounding in terms of just how much sort of the classic NASDAQ outperformed the NASDAQ Golden Dragon or even the Hang Seng indexes.
Yes, as you say, I think we were all aware of it, but just to see the actual numbers in front of us was quite staggering. What is interesting is that even within the NASDAQ, you also had a lot of divergence, I suppose you could call it. Mm. So there's really the large cap, established, very profitable, dominant companies that drove the NASDAQ forward. But yeah, within China, as we know, last year we had a lot of regulatory clampdown. We had operational momentum that slowed down, and investors really just pulled back the valuations that they placed on Chinese technology businesses.
Yeah, and put them into those, I want to say boring, but in a sense, those established large cap US tech stocks. You might be worth a trillion, but you can still double from that, is one of the lessons we're learning fast. And unprofitable tech companies, which had really had a fairly good 2020, and I suppose that was partly pandemic driven, they also starting to underperform the more established. It's almost in a sense that we kind of went to the safety of profitable large tech.
Yes, absolutely, Simon. And that gap between unprofitable and profitable tech really started to come through in the fourth quarter of last year. And if we think back to then, that's when we started to see some concerns in markets about the phenomena of rising inflation and rising yields. And that's continued in January. So we've continued to see let's call it the more speculative, more emerging part of technology, mid-cap technology, come under significant pressure. And as you say, I think investors to a degree are almost hiding in the large-cap technology businesses, so the likes of Apple, Facebook, Alphabet, etc.
Other trends, which again, you know, part of the particularly the hard lockdown, so sort of second quarter of 2020, we saw a lot of, you know, I'm thinking, for example, in Netflix. I mean, suddenly everyone was signing up from Netflix, but because we couldn't leave our homes. And those trends have markedly reversed as well. The sort of stay-at-home stocks, such as Netflix and others, gaming to a degree as well, they're really struggling now. We saw that in the recent Netflix numbers. They added just over 8 million, but their forward-looking statement was, you know, just adding a couple of million. I mean, they're a giant business now, but certainly that heyday that they had, see, and the easy win has passed.
Yes, I mean, it does seem as if let's call it the winners of the initial winners of the pandemic in 2020, the likes of video gaming stocks, Zoom is one that comes to mind, yeah. Peloton, video streaming, as you say. It's almost as if that high base that they set in 2020 has made it very difficult for them to grow meaningfully off of that base in 2021 and subsequent to that, as we start off 2022. It is interesting. I've just seen this morning, for example, that Bill Ackman of Pershing Square has bought a meaningful stake in Netflix. So I think we are getting to a place where some of these valuations are starting to look compelling. But certainly, it's in the short term, operationally, they are facing challenges.
Yeah, and I take your point on that. I mean, Netflix is not going away. They've got 200 million subscribers. They've certainly got some pricing power. They just put another increase through in the US. A last point, and this really was the one that absolutely caught me surprise. We'd obviously had a massive increase in online retail sales, massive jump in sort of second quarter of 2020, going from what, 11.4 to 15.7%. That's actually pulled back a whole bunch, down to 13% in the third quarter of last year. When I read that, I'm like, well, okay, I suppose we are going to the shops more, we're able to. I was still surprised, but you make the point that, sure, there's a pullback, but we're still going to sort of settle maybe at this level and then continue the growth going forward for online retail.
Yes, Simon, it's been quite surprising in the sense that when we had that spike up in U.S. e-commerce penetration up to about 15%, many people at the time, including many prominent e-commerce CEOs and investors, were saying, well, this is a new base. This is a new base that we're going to grow off of. We're pulling forward demand by several years. So the thinking was that we were just going to kind of continue to grow that e-commerce penetration from that 15%. And as you say, as lockdown restrictions have eased, people have started to go out a bit more, go to the malls. E-commerce demand has settled back to that long-term trend line. And so it's in the short term, it is proving quite challenging for the e-commerce sector.
Yeah, I was one of those who really thought we had a new base we could work from. I was surprised to see the amount of that pullback. Selecho Tatsi, investment analyst, Anchor Capital, appreciate the early morning time, sir.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At StanLib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com. or speak to your financial advisor. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Hayley Ivins-Downs, Head of Digital at Lightstone Property. They put out some great property reports on a fairly regular basis. Hayley, appreciate the time this morning. I suppose the first question to kick off with was, were we seeing increases in property prices, sort of overall, the residential property, during 2021?
Awesome. Thank you for this opportunity. Yes, we certainly have seen an increase. The average price of properties has increased by 14% from 2020 to 2021. So that has definitely been seen in the numbers.
And that, I mean, my sense is that's a chunky increase. I mean, you know, for residential property, a double digit is real.
It is real. And when we kind of break it down into the property types, the biggest portion is actually on the freehold, which is your standalone houses. That's at 18%. Estates are at 9%, sectional title 5%. So it's really interesting. People are looking at a bigger property, possibly working from home. Yeah, it's really interesting.
I suppose so. I live in a small flat and it was fine. And then the pandemic arrived and it was like, oh, I see. But the other thing that really struck me, we've got all this talk around Zoom towns, you know, people leaving Joburg and Cape Town and the like. And, well, I wasn't so sure, but the evidence is there. I mean, there were some of the Eastern Capes, the Free States, who actually were leading the pack. There is certain evidence that people are saying, thanks, Joburg, it's been real, but we're going to go live in, I don't know, Rosendahl Cookhouse.
Yeah, definitely. We've actually seen a growth in transactions specifically in Eastern Cape and Western Cape. There's definitely a move down to those areas where people are actually being able to work remotely. Mm. And in actual fact, in Western Cape, I mean, growth in transactions, we've had almost just 15%, mm-hmm. Really higher than Gauteng. So Eastern Cape and Western Cape have had more transactions in property than Gauteng.
Yeah.
So it's definitely the move.
And price points. Early in the pandemic, we saw I suppose sort of mid 2020, a lot of activity in lower costs, sort of the affordable housing space. I mean, interest rates at generational lows. Has that trend continued, or are we starting to see more activity up the sort of cost curve?
Definitely up the cost curve, which is actually really interesting. So the band that is performing the most is your 700K to 1.5 mil. Mm-hmm. We're seeing the most amount of transactions within that band. And specifically in quarter four, 2020, there was a 25% increase in that band in terms of properties being sold. And even more so within kind of between 2019, 2021, we're looking at an increase in the 1.5 to 3 mil of 44%. So
wow.
Definitely in the upper echelons, there's a lot more sales, but the 700 to 1.5 mil is definitely the band where the biggest amount of transactions have been happening. And in actual fact, what we're seeing is the market of 250,000 and lower mm-hmm. has actually been the market that slumped during COVID and coming out of COVID. It's actually been the line that's dropped out of all of them.
Okay, and that gets me thinking about some of the construction companies on the JSE.
Yes.
A last question, first-time buyers. I mean, anecdotally, I got a number of friends who suddenly all became property owners during a pandemic, which had me scratching my head, but they wanted more space, interest rates were low, there was opportunity. Are we still seeing a lot of activity from first-time buyers?
Yes, absolutely. So then those numbers are back up to what they were in 2018. We're looking at kind of the back end of 2020. The quarter 3, quarter 4 of 2020 was really high. We had about 64,000 kind of transactions in a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And comparing to 2018 of 61. So, and now we're looking at about 55,000. So definitely the numbers are back up there.
If I put all this together, I mean, counterintuitively, during a pandemic, the property market has done all right. And in fact, we could make a case that it's coming out looking quite good.
It's absolutely the one sector that has really done well. We've seen numbers and transactions that has never been seen before. We've reached points that have never been reached before. So, and that's number of transactions, that's mm-hmm. value of sales happening. I think it's really great for the property industry. I think this next year is going to be interesting if there's interest rate increases, because that's always a factor that kind of changes some activity. But I think at the moment it's really rallying. I think it's really good.
Yeah, and that is not something I would have expected. But there's a lot about the pandemic that I did not expect that I've come out wiser.
No.
Hayley Ivins-Downs, Head of Digital at Lightstone Property, talking residential property trends. Appreciate the early morning time. That's it for today. Yesterday, we were chatting with Christy Fulon from PwC, the economist there. Local economic outlook for the year. The IMF had just downgraded us to 1.9% expectation GDP. He's more bullish at 2.6. He made a great point in the interview, though, where he said, look, you know what, at this point in the year, we're in January, kind of, it's, I don't want to say guessing, that's my word, not his, but it's a bit wide in terms of the ranges. And as the year moves on, we'll sort of be able to narrow it down as we get more data points, as we get first and second quarter GDP. But we asked you what you thought GDP for the year would be. A third of you said under 2%, a quarter say above 2%, and the rest of you say either way, it's just not enough. And that truthfully is it. You know, even if we hit Christy Fulon's 2.6%, it's just not enough. Have your say, have your vote, Twitter and LinkedIn. We've got the new poll up there talking around volatility in markets. Was that the bottom, or are you just standing by and watching? This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast available just after 7. Thanks to my team, Nicole, Eddie, Nabuchle. Thanks to you for listening, my guests for their early morning time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.